you know, it is. It's a little chilly still. But tomorrow looks good.
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact. Yes,
as
does
Saturday, as does Sunday.
I'm working Saturday.
What?
Yeah, I'm working. I know, it's as shocking as it seems.
Man, they're getting one over on you.
Somebody still thinks I'm employable. All right, so. Ugh. All right, I want to start with basketball, and then we'll get to the football part, if you don't mind.
I plead the fifth.
I want to start with Lamar Stevens. He signs a two-way with Cleveland. It was also a night where Daron Hayes' son Killian was drafted. We talked about him earlier in the week. But still, I mean, Lamar ends up, I think, actually in a good situation for him. I think it gives him a real shot with a two-way with a franchise like Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too tuned into, like, Cleveland's roster, but, you know, certainly.
And since LeBron left, nobody in Cleveland is either.
Yeah, well exactly. So, and there's uncertainty, obviously, about the G League this year, but, yeah, I mean, look, for Penn State basketball players, getting an opportunity is what you want, right? I mean, it's, yep. They've all been going back to Taylor Battle, right? I mean, it's all been about, and obviously you predate that, but it's all about can you get an opportunity and can you stick? And that's right. that's been the hardest thing. I mean, you know, you've seen a lot of guys go on to have very successful overseas careers, but less so in the NBA. And you know, look. It's tough, it's the league for a reason. Right. And so, you know, for Lamar, it's got to improve that 3-point shooting, which was, and that's how he sticks. Right. I mean, if he can shoot it, he'll get himself an opportunity and he'll be okay. It's just a matter of, actually doing that.
All right, so now I go to the next part, and that was yesterday's press conference. It's one thing that if you're going to handpick a group of individuals that probably can be free with what they think and can say, it usually will be the student athlete, especially these days.
Sure.
How free and open were they with their comments yesterday?
They were free and open, Steve. It's touchy, right? I mean, it's. Obviously, given the fact that of the timing, right? Like nobody, right? If you're a college basketball player, college athlete, okay, you don't anticipate your head coach for virtually any reason being removed a month before the start of the season.
Right.
Yes, you understand that sometimes coaching changes happen. That's part of the game. Everybody gets that. But you expect that in April, you know, for college basketball specifically, you expect that at that time of year. And so it's raw. I mean, the scabs are fresh and the wounds are fresh. And, you know, I think that if you listen to what those guys had to say, obviously Jamari Wheeler, Miles Dredd, these are thoughtful guys. And that's always been the case of Penn State basketball players. You've always had thoughtful kids come through this program.
Yes.
Yes, there's disappointment among them that this happened and that Pat Chambers is no longer their head coach. But if you really kind of read through the tea leaves, some of their disappointment, and I would even argue a majority of it, is attached to the fact that they, a month later, still don't feel like they know why.
Right. And let's be fair, in a situation like this, they're not going to have all the information that the decision makers have.
Right? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so, I mean, you and I don't know what that is. I mean, we don't know. But they're also people who signed here, not just with the university and not with just with the front of the jersey. They signed with the head coach too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what is expected. And again, I mean, that's, if performance isn't there, if those things, like, the name is escaping me. Greg Williams, who's the Wichita State?
Greg Marshall.
Greg Marshall. Yep. Right? Like, the guy at Rutgers, who was pegging kids with basketballs, right? Yeah, like, right. You get it. You get it. You saw it, and you understand it, and it makes sense. Performance dismissals, they make sense. Like, you get it.
Sure.
But this one is just, it's just really, really hard, you know, for these guys to come to terms with for a variety of reasons, but namely just not having that wasn't their experience. And the thing that Jamari complained about that, you know, I thought was particularly poignant was nobody asked him, right?
Right.
Like if, he felt and expressed that, you know, he felt like he should have been part of that conversation, not part of the conversation of, hey, should you retain this guy as the head coach, but the conversation of, you're an African-American athlete here. What has your experience been, you know, with this guy as your head coach? And to have not been able to provide that input, I think, is, you know, just another sticking point with these guys.
All right, now I'll turn the page over to football and something that James – now, we knew that there was at least, I believe, before the Indiana game, I think there was at least one false positive before the Indiana game. Okay, so we've known since the opener that they exist.
Yep.
43 is a big number, you know, because 43 means – let's just – this is game five. That means you're averaging 11 false positives – you know, you're averaging, what, 8-9 false positives a week.
Yeah,
I mean that's a big number. Now the positive part is that they all eventually come back negative, so they're available. That's why it's a false positive. But still, it is a problem they have to, you know, that they have to somehow figure out how to overcome.
Yeah. So I am not doubting or calling into question the hurdles and the challenges that creates.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I guess my question is to find out, right? So like 43 sounds like a big number, and I think that it is, but I'm also thinking of it in the context of how many tests they actually do. And you know, you got to understand they're testing. What would you estimate? 150 people every day, 170 yeah. people every day.
Every day, but here's the multiple with the 43. Okay, you get a false positive. Well, how do you know you have a false positive? Because you then have to take the PCR test.
Right.
Right. See, that's where it gets involved. You have to take that test to confirm whether it's positive or not. So it's the additional step you have to take and the time it takes to do that.
Yeah. No, it's funny, not funny.
Funny, strange. I know, funny, strange.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing's funny about this year. But you know, listening to James Franklin talk now versus August, you know, when it was a fight to save the life of the college football season.
Yep.
It's dramatic, right? I mean, it's a big difference in determining what the value is of this.
Yeah.
And it's not just based on winning or losing. It's all right, we thought that this was something worth saving. We thought that the ability, you have to give them the player, right? Everything's in the context of the players, okay?
Yes.
But it's also the coaches, it's everybody, right? You've got this whole ecosystem of people whose purpose is to do football, right? In some capacity. Playing, coaching, support staff, whatever.
Yeah.
This is what their main thing is. And so it was worth it to make that fight to figure out a way to do it, not to mention the revenue, you know, aspect. But now that they're trying to do it and the season is going on, right? Today was the 15th game canceled for this week of college football,
mm-hmm.
right? The Maryland deal. Penn State obviously has felt this particularly hard in terms of the ramifications, not just from a COVID scale, but it's a butterfly effect. There are things beyond just the initial impact that have really kind of dinged up this program's ability to win games, right? And we all know how small the margin is in the first place. You know, when those things happen, it just makes it that much tougher. You know, so I think it's a catch 22, because if you're not playing this season, you're miserable right now.
Right.
You know, what are you doing? But the fact that they are playing, I think that the disconnect is trying to get the public at large to understand everything that's going into this. And it's massive. You're not dealing with a normal set of circumstances. It might look normal on TV, but it's not.
You mentioned normal on TV. I believe that was your seat last Saturday, correct? Watching it on TV?
That is correct.
Right. Okay.
First time in a long time.
So what was your perspective watching it from TV? What did you get out of it, and what were some of the conclusions you came to?
You know, it was better once my 2-year-old took a nap. That was an improvement on the viewing experience. It's good and bad. There are advantages to being at home in terms of now, granted, with nobody in the stadium, there are few distractions to begin with.
Yeah.
But at home, there's even fewer, right? I mean, again, once the kid went to bed, I had multiple screens going. I'm able to the stats and all that stuff.
Right.
You're locked in, and so that's a good aspect. But it's hard to read all of the extraneous stuff, right? You don't see anybody going into the injury tent. You don't see, you know, body language. All of those things play a factor, and it's just varying levels of removed this year, right? Because even being in the stadium, everybody's got a mask on. You can't tell what James's facial expressions are. You don't know. You can't read into any of those things. So, you know, it was okay. It was okay. It wasn't great.
Yeah, no, because that was something when Jack and I talked about with the network what we wanted to do. I mean, they agreed with us, which was great, because being there, we can see all that stuff. What's interesting, though, and I get asked about this all the time, what's it like with no fans? I notice it when the team runs out, but then once the game starts, because of what you know, my job happens to be, Steve, follow the ball.
All right? Yeah.
Once the game starts, I don't notice it. Now, and that's just my perspective, which is different than what yours is going to be.
Yeah. I also think, I mean, this goes back to Indiana, but Indiana was the most, it had an element of being locked in as though it was like just competitiveness, right? Just competitors out there on the field, which I imagine is mostly 95% of that experience for those guys, for those college players. That's what it is. I mean, you know, we always make a big deal in the media about the crowd and the influence and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it does play a part. Yes, it creates atmosphere. But you know,
you know what? In all fairness, those athletes tell us all the time that they don't hear much tell me it's like usually like maybe 10 seconds after they get so locked in, they don't hear what's going on.
Yeah, you don't hear it, and you don't see, like, I think that in a lot of ways in Iowa, it's funny, you know, Penn State playing Iowa this weekend, like a lot of the conversation at away venues for Penn State is they hear while they're on the sideline. They're getting screamed at while they're on the sideline, and you can hear it because they're right next to you. They're literally standing right next to you. But no, I mean, you know, look, these guys have checklist of a million things that they are responsible for on every play. When they're out there on the field, they don't notice that stuff. You know, it's just that's not a factor.
A pleasure, my friend, as always. Thank you so much for your time and your insight. Very much. Just it doesn't really feel like Q&A, just feels like conversation. So I appreciate that.
Steve, do you have a pick this week? Do you make picks? I don't know how that works for you.
Pick what? For the game?
No, they're like, I mean, like Herbie doesn't pick, right? Like,
right.
But I don't have any idea what to expect this weekend. I'm lost.
Nobody does. I don't even think Iowa knows what to expect.
I mean, good point.
I mean, I don't know what to expect from them because their two wins are over two teams where you sit back and go, Really? Especially the defenses of those two teams, Minnesota and Michigan yep. State, really struggled defensively. So I don't know.
I was telling T. Frank, Penn State's defense is not as bad.
Oh,
like,
no.
Statistically, it's a false flag. It's a mirage. They're not bad. They've actually been much better than the numbers indicate.
I told that. I said I was interviewed by the Iowa Network for their pregame show this morning, and I said the same thing.
A third of the points that they've given up have been on short fields or turnovers, and that's not them.
Right, exactly. That is not them. And the second half of each of the last two games, they haven't given up more than 100 yards in either one. Yeah. All right.
We'll see.
We'll see. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Nate.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.